get started. Exodus 13, 1 through 10. Let's read this in preparation for the second class on the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Hopefully I'm getting everybody's minds to thinking about these things a little bit. And certainly if you've got any thoughts, please bring them to me. I think it's interesting. I've already talked to a couple of people about some different things. And one comment I received referred to the enlightened rejector aspect of fitting into this. And you know, I think as we look at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, I didn't specifically say that, but the same thought went through my head was that this certainly, if you understand the type involved with the feast, would kind of shoot down the theory of the enlightened rejector being possible. Because as we mentioned with the Passover, that represents our baptism. That's the first step that we have to go through. And if we can't make it through that step, then we don't get to partake of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And all the remaining feasts that go along with it. So as we talk about the Feast of Unleavened Bread, there's a lot of overlap between all of these different feasts. They're very closely knit together. And there's preparation that was involved with this at the same time that they were preparing for the Passover. They were preparing for the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So there's some more types that I think if you... From the enlightened rejector aspect, you think about that, you'll see how hard it is to try to fit that belief in with what the types are here. So if you have, if anybody's got any comments, I certainly would like to hear it. We're not touching on everything that's in the scriptures to do with all of these feasts, but hopefully the main point is that you'll come away with the spiritual teaching or the spiritual lesson that is in the type that we have with the feast. So anyway, let's look at Exodus 13, 1 through 10. And have a little bit more description here of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Sanctify unto me all the firstborn, whatsoever openeth the womb among the children of Israel, both of man and of beast, it is mine. And Moses said unto the people, Remember this day in which ye came out of from Egypt, out of the house of bondage. For by strength of hand the Lord brought you out from this place. There shall no leavened bread be eaten. This day came ye out in the month Abib. And it shall be, when the Lord shall bring thee into the land of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, which he sware unto thy fathers to give thee, a land flowing with milk and honey, that thou shalt keep this service in this month. 7 days thou shalt eat unleavened bread, and in the seventh day shall be a feast to the Lord. Unleavened bread shall be eaten 7 days, and there shall no leavened bread be seen with thee, neither shall there be leaven seen with thee in all thy quarters. And thou shalt show thy son in that day, saying, This is done because of that which the Lord did unto me when I came forth out of Egypt. And it shall be for a sign unto thee upon thine hand, and for a memorial between thine eyes, and the Lord's law may be in thy mouth. For with a strong hand hath the Lord brought thee out of Egypt, and thou shalt therefore keep this ordinance in his season from year to year. Very shortly after killing the Paschal lamb and putting the blood on the lintel and the side posts, the people stayed safely in their house, following Yahweh's instructions, partaking of the lamb, the unleavened bread and the bitter herbs, consuming all until morning. They were not to leave their house until morning. We've already covered many of these details in discussing the Passover, which we mentioned was the foundation feast, which all the others are built on. After the original Passover, it was a memorial service every year that led into the subsequent festivals. The Feast of Unleavened Bread began the day after the Passover, the 15th of Abib, and lasted for 7 days. The first and the seventh days were to be a holy convocation or meeting set aside for God in which no servile work was to be done. Sometimes people, in referring to Passover, will be talking about the Feast of Unleavened Bread because the only unleavened bread is eaten for Passover in the 7 days following. You know, it's interesting when you think about servile work. That was one of the things I researched a little bit as well. And not everybody is in agreement as to what that means. Some people thought it was work that you were paid for, work of a servant. So that was even one of those points that was confusing and hard to find out the exact meaning. But we know that a Sabbath was intended when they said no servile work was to be done, that it became a special day set aside for the Lord. The timing of the month and when these feasts were to occur, they're listed in several different places throughout the scriptures. And we can see some of them up here. And the descendants of the captivity kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month from Ezra 6:19. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, you shall observe the Passover, a feast of 7 days. Unleavened bread shall be eaten, Ezekiel 45:21. So we just don't find these in the beginning first few Bibles, scriptures, in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, or wherever, but they're throughout the scriptures. Here's Leviticus 23:5, in the 14th day of the first month, that even is the Lord's Passover. On the 14th day of the month, at twilight, is the Lord's Passover. In the first month, on the 14th day of the month, at evening, ye shall eat unleavened bread until the 21st day of the month, at evening. And they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month, at twilight, in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So the children of Israel did, Numbers 9:5. On the 14th day of the first month is the Passover of the Lord. Now Josiah kept the Passover to the Lord in Jerusalem, and they slaughtered the Passover lambs on the 14th day of the first month, 2 Chronicles 35:1. So we quite a few scriptures where these things are mentioned. The 7 day time period included the day the Passover meal was eaten. This conclusion is drawn by Bud Roth, Brother Bud Roth, and it makes sense to me if we believe that the Passover lamb was slain at the end of the 14th day. And then the meal was actually eaten or occurred early on the 15th of Abib. So on the 14th, when they were told to keep the Passover, that would have, if they did this at the very end of the day, then the day ran into the 15th. So they would have actually been partaking of the meal as these things were, the days were changing from one day to the next. The Jewish day beginning at dark or after sundown would mean that the 15th day would be starting right after the Passover events. The common belief is that the Passover sacrifice would have occurred sometime after 12 noon on the 14th day and before the 15th day began at night or darkness. Again, remember the between the evening aspect, that actual darkness was when would start the next day. So sundown began, or it was one evening, and then you had the twilight period, and then it became dark, and then the new day began. It makes sense that the sacrifice would probably have been slain around 3 p.m., or what was known as the Jewish ninth hour, which was the time of the evening sacrifice and prayer. And a lot of the things that the Jewish people do today is according to tradition, and we don't know that some of the things that they do today are exactly like they used to be 2,000 years ago or 3,000 years or whatever. They don't even know themselves for sure, but they, we can only look at some of the things that they do today, and hopefully we can put all these things together and come up with some kind of understanding that makes sense. But if they, if the Passover was slain around 3 p.m. or the Jewish ninth hour, this would have allowed time for the killing of the sacrifice, the sprinkling of the blood, and then the roasting of the lamb. So there had to be some time involved with this. They had to prepare the fire. They had to roast the lamb, which could have taken several hours. And then they were to eat through the night, which would have been the 15th day and the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. If we look at some of the various scriptures here, the ninth hour, or 3 p.m. by the Jewish reckoning, would also correspond with the actual time that were given of Jesus' death. Mark 15:25 says, "And it was the third hour, and they crucified him. And when the sixth hour was come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Loi, Loi, lama sabachthani, which is being interpreted, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 7 and 8, we find out the possible meaning of what unleavened bread represents. "Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened. For Christ, even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us." We see that many things are cleared up for us in the New Testament, and there's no doubt at all of our interpretation of certain things. They're confirmed in the New Testament. "Therefore, let us keep the feast not with the old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." So we see that unleavened bread was the symbol of sincerity and truth. Sometimes, as we mentioned earlier, this feast is considered as part of the Passover because only unleavened bread was eaten. And as we read from Exodus 23 earlier, it is one of the three annual feasts to be kept. It's actually the first of the three feasts that's mentioned to be kept. The words mentioned were, and as I read, it now sticks out in my mind, and hopefully these things will start to stick out in your mind. When we read from Exodus 23, there was a comment in there. It said, "that none shall appear before me empty." Sometimes we just read these things and they don't really stand out or mean anything to us, but said, "none shall appear before me empty." What is the possible lesson to be learned? Having come out from under bondage by the power of the sacrifice of Christ, or again, the type that we have from the Passover, we must fill ourselves with sincerity and truth. The leaven or the sin has been purged from us, and we should fill ourselves with the Word of God, so that we may not appear before Him empty, spiritually empty. We started a journey at baptism, and now the number 7, representing spiritual completeness, tells us that we are to fill ourselves until spiritually complete and ready to stand before the judgment seat. We probably should take a closer look at how the Jews prepare for Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. As with the preparation for the Passover meal, where they had to select the lamb on the 10th of Abib, 4 days before they were to slay the lamb, there also has to be preparation for the removal of all leaven from the premises. No leaven could be left anywhere. We might think, just looking at it on the surface, that they just went into the kitchen and threw out the yeast or the bread that was in the cabinet. They held this feast then and today a little more seriously than that, and it requires some work and effort to make sure there's not a speck of leaven in the home. If there was any left, the consequence was being cut off from the congregation of Israel. Exodus 12:19, 7 days shall there be no leaven found in your houses. For whosoever eateth that which is leavened, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land. So it wasn't just 7 days, actually, because you couldn't come up on the first day and just say, well, all the leaven's gone. So it took some time, because they were used to baking with leaven, and since they took it so seriously, realizing that it was going to mean that they would be cut off, they may take several days of preparation time to try to remove all the leaven from their house. The common Jewish tradition in preparation for the feast is to spread breadcrumbs containing leaven throughout the house and then sweep them all up and burn them outside. By doing this, they made sure that they swept every corner. These are some other things that I found online as far as, again, today, tradition, what they do involving the removal of leaven from their homes. It says here probably the most significant observance related to Pesach, Passover, involves the removal of hummets, leaven, sounds like hum, it's with Scottish CH, from our homes. This commemorates the fact that the Jews leaving Egypt were in a hurry and did not have time to let their bread rise. That was also a symbolic way of removing the puffiness, arrogance, and pride. So it says we may not eat hummets during Pesach, we may not even own it or derive benefit from it. We may not even feed it to our pets or cattle. All hummets, including utensils used to cook hummets, or again, we're talking about leaven, must either be disposed of or sold to a non-Jew. They can be repurchased after the holidays. This gives you an idea of how they've kind of twisted some of the laws around. Pets' diets must be changed for the holiday, or the pets must be sold to non-Jew. Like food and utensils, the pets can be repurchased after the holiday ends. So they have ways to get around some of these things. They also said if they saw a mouse run across the floor with a crumb in its mouth, they would have to start cleaning all over again, because that crumb would have leaven in it and they wouldn't know where it was. So by doing this, they were making sure that they cleaned everywhere. So it may sound a little bit silly in some cases, but the thing is, it was important. They didn't want to be cut off from the house of Israel. And it should be important to us as well. Perhaps the way that they do things isn't a way today that was prescribed in scriptures. The scriptures don't tell us that that's how we're supposed to clean our house. It just says we're not to have any leaven there. And the point that we're to learn is that we have to work and to search for the leaven to remove it. Again, you can't just go to the kitchen and say, I'm going to take it out of the cabinet and throw it out. And there may be leaven somewhere else, and we have to make sure that it's not there. There's a spiritual lesson here, and that is that it takes time and preparation in our own life to purge out leaven. We have to search inwardly and be ready to part with the things that may have been commonplace in our lives. Now think about this again in the timing of when this is taking place. This isn't on the day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, after Passover. Again, Passover being representative of our baptism, coming out from bondage in Adam. They had to do it before that. And it's the same way with us. Before we come to the waters of baptism, we have to search ourselves. We have to take out as much leaven as we can. We have to be prepared to remove these things from our lives that are not pleasant to God. So it's a preparation phase that we have to take. And I think the Christadelphians take that seriously. You know, it's not like other religions in the world that one day somebody says, well, you have to accept Jesus, and then they say, okay, they do. That's not something that can just happen overnight. So we have to search inwardly and then be ready to part with those things prior to baptism. When we come to a point that we think that we've completed the task of removing all the leaven, or that we're spiritually ready to partake of the Passover meal through baptism, partaking of Christ in baptism, and purge out the old man and eating of the new, then we're ready, and then we are to continue after we go through baptism for 7 days with the Feast of Unleavened Bread until we're spiritually complete. This would be the remainder of our life, or until Christ returns if we're alive. So the 7-day period represents our entire life. When considering that it was their life that was at stake, if there was any leaven in the house, you can be sure of their diligence in removing it. Are we as diligent in removing the leaven from our lives? Leaven adds to the taste of bread in a natural sense and makes it desirable to the taste. I recently heard someone on the radio saying that they could never work in a bakery because they would eat all the hot bread right as it came out of the oven. And I was thinking, well, I can relate to that. You know, hot bread is not much better than hot bread. And if you've got one of those home bakers, you understand that too. But unleavened bread isn't so savory. It's the same way with sin. Sometimes we desire the things that we shouldn't, and without restraint, we would fill ourselves up until we finally were just too full, and we may sit back and think, how did I get so off track? It's a constant struggle, and the unleavened bread, although maybe not as pleasant at the moment, will sustain us, and it will lead us to the more important bread that we can get from heaven. It appears that the unleavened bread actually lasted the children of Israel for 30 days, and then they were filled with the true bread of heaven, the manna. Maybe a comparison between the law of Moses and the law of the Spirit of life in Christ. Perhaps another point to put some more thought into. Romans 8:2 says, "For the law of the Spirit of life in Christ Jesus hath made me free from the law of sin and death." For the feast, there are two Sabbaths where no work is to be done. But between the Sabbaths, there is no restriction of work. But the unleavened bread must still be eaten. Now this also depends on when the first day and the seventh day begin and end, as they might not coincide with the normal week. There may be a normal Sabbath day in the middle somewhere. So if the first day of the feast fell on a Thursday, it would be a special Sabbath or high holy day. Then we would have the normal Sabbath 2 days later, which would be on a Saturday. And then at the end of the 7 days, there would be another special Sabbath day, ending the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So we can see that the time period was to be well occupied with the service to the Lord. So whatever we engage ourselves in doing, we must do it in sincerity and truth, with unleavened bread. We believe that it is during this time that the sickle is put to the barley to reap the first fruits to the Lord, and recognize that in our labor, the Lord provides us the harvest. The waving of the first sheaf happening during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Again, so we start to see another overlap. There may be some correlation between the 7 days and the 7 days of creation, but we didn't run into any specific information that related the two. It does seem to be that there could be some indication or link between the times of the Jews and the times of the Gentiles, having the week split with the Sabbath day in the middle. There could be some other special significance that escapes us at this time. There is a requirement that for each of the 7 days, an offering of fire was to be made, as with the Passover meal, which was to be roasted with fire This would seem to have some indication of the aspect of tried faith. As Jesus was tempted just as we, he was made strong by the things which he suffered. He overcame his temptations and remained strong even to his very death on the cross. In his prayer to his heavenly Father, he asked that if it be possible that the cup pass from him. But nevertheless, he said, "Thy will be done." Matthew 26, verse 39 says, "And he went a little farther, and fell on his face and prayed, saying, O my Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." The roasting of the offering for the 7 days should remind us that we too will be tried in our faith. At the end of the 7th day, or when we reach the time of spiritual perfection, our trials will end, and we will be complete, ready for judgment. 1 Peter 1, 7, "That the trial of your faith, being much more precious than of gold that perisheth, though it be tried with fire, might be found unto praise and honor and glory at the appearing of Jesus Christ." Continuing on in Peter, 1 Peter 4:12, "Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you, as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice, inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy." If we look at Exodus 12:18, we see that the unleavened bread was to be eaten in the first month on the 14th day at even until the 21st day at even. 12:18 reads, "In the first month on the 14th day of the month at even, ye shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 and 20th day of the month at even." This would seem on the surface to contradict the other passages that mention the feast beginning on the 15th day. Leviticus 23:5 says, "In the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover, and on the 15th day of the same month is the feast of unleavened bread unto the Lord. 7 days ye must eat unleavened bread." This, we believe, shows us the inseparable relationship between Passover and the feast of unleavened bread. The 14th day at even, and we've mentioned this before, and I know I'm repeating it numerous times, so it will become one of those things that gets ingrained in your mind, hopefully. But the 14th day at even would have been the Passover meal and the beginning of the 15th day. So there's really no discrepancy between these two scriptures, because one flowed right into the next. Something that does present a question to me is the first and the 7th day being a holy convocation or gathering to the Lord, and no work was to be done. At the original Passover, did this take place, or was this feast added to the Passover memorial for their remembrance? It would seem that this is possibly the case, as the people quickly left Egypt the night after Passover or the morning of the 15th day of Abib. Exodus 12:29-33 reads, "And it came to pass that at midnight the Lord smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sat on his throne unto the firstborn of the captive that was in the dungeon, and all the firstborn of cattle. And Pharaoh rose up in the night, he and all the servants and all the Egyptians, and there was a great cry in Egypt, for there was not a house where there was not one dead. And he called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, Rise up, and get you forth from among my people, ye and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as ye have said. Also take your flocks and your herds as ye have said, and be gone and bless me also. And the Egyptians were urgent upon the people that they might send them out of the land in haste, for they said, We be all dead men." So they left very quickly, as the Egyptians by now did not want them around at all. And if we look at Exodus 12:25, And they seemed to suggest that the service was not to be kept until they came into the land which the Lord had promised. And it shall come to pass when you be come to the land which the Lord will give you, according as he hath promised, that ye shall keep the service. Also, Exodus 13, 3 through 5, and Moses said unto the people, remember this day in which ye came out of, from Egypt, out of the house of bondage. For by strength of the hand of the Lord brought you out from this place. There shall no leavened bread be eaten. This day came ye out in the month of Abib. And it shall be when the Lord shall bring thee into the land of the Canaanites, and the Hittites, and the Amorites, and the Hivites, and the Jebusites, which ye swear unto the fathers to give thee, a land flowing with milk and honey, that thou shalt keep this service in this month. Originally, the plan may have been that they would have been in the land very quickly. Of course, we know things changed and they wandered in the wilderness for the next 40 years. And of course, we know that God knew how these things were going to turn out all along. But it does appear that this was an indication that this feast was to be kept after they went into the land. We mentioned earlier that from Exodus 23:15, that none of the people would appear before God empty. Provided with unleavened bread, the bread of sincerity and truth, and eating of the Passover meal, it becomes evident that we must spend our time feeding on the spiritual bread of life, Jesus Christ, and purging out the leaven or the sin that can so easily corrupt. To further strengthen this teaching, we are told that anyone that ate of the leaven would be cut off from the congregation. Strict rules were given concerning the strangers that may have been in their house, as they were to abide by the same guidelines as the Jews. We have to remember when we are studying about these first spring festivals that there are lessons there for spiritual Israel, us. Many of the details are therefore us to be able to say, yes, Christ was indeed the fulfillment of the intended teaching, and can be linked in with the New Testament scriptures in the timing of the actual events. We are to look at the other details about how they apply to us and what we are to gain from them and how we should apply these things to our lives. With the point about the stranger or the foreigner, we may ask, what were they doing in their house anyway? One that isn't of the same heritage or doesn't have the same hope that we have. That should remind us of our separateness. They were not to eat of the Passover, which included the unleavened bread, or they were to accept the covenant of circumcision, thus showing that there is only one way to partake of Christ, and that is according to the truth, or the teachings of God. Without partaking of this element first, they could not continue to the next step. They were to have one law. For the children of Israel leaving Egypt, they had to endure without bread for 30 days, or just the unleavened bread that they were able to carry out with them, until the time that the Lord fed them with the manna from heaven. Reading from Exodus 15, we have the song of Moses, and reading verse 13 through 18. Thou in thy mercy hast led forth the people which thou hast redeemed. Thou hast guided them in thy strength unto the holy, to thy holy habitation. The people shall hear and be afraid. Sorrow shall take hold on the inhabitants of Palestine. Then the dukes of Edom shall be amazed. The mighty men of Moab trembling shall take hold upon them. All the inhabitants of Canaan shall melt away. Fear and dread shall fall upon them. By the greatness of thine arm they shall be as still as stone. Thy people pass over, O Lord, till the people pass over which thou hast purchased. Thou shalt bring them in and plant them in the mountain of thine inheritance, in the place, O Lord, which thou hast made for thee to dwell. In the sanctuary, O Lord, which thy hands have established, the Lord shall reign forever and ever. Moses mentioned that the people were redeemed and that they were purchased. We too have been redeemed and purchased by the blood of Christ, the blood of the everlasting covenant. The eating of the unleavened bread was to be a reminder of the bondage in Egypt, which they left in haste. The manna was the hope that was in store for them and for us. From John 6, reading from verses 49 through 51, Christ tells us, "Your fathers did eat manna in the wilderness and are dead. This is the bread which cometh down from heaven, that a man may eat thereof and not die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If any man eat of this bread, he shall live forever. And the bread that I will give is my flesh, which I will give for the life of the world." The goodness of God is beyond our comprehension. He has provided everything for us in this life and has made the way possible for life everlasting. As the feasts show us how tightly woven together the Passover is with the Feast of Unleavened Bread, we can see the connection in our lives of baptism, being redeemed and purchased by the blood of Christ, and the necessity of living a life of sincerity and truth until his return. Lest we murmur and complain and desire the flesh pots and leavened bread which will fill us to the fullest, but only temporarily, let us feed on Christ, who is that true bread of life. Continuing in John 6, verse 55 through 58, "For my flesh is meat indeed, and my blood is drink indeed. He that eateth my flesh and drinketh my blood dwelleth in me, and I in him. As the living Father hath sent me, and I live by the Father, so he that eateth me, even he shall live by me. This is that bread which came down from heaven. Not as your fathers did eat manna and are dead, he that eateth of this bread shall live forever." If we feed on Christ, the period of trial should be like that of Hezekiah's day when they kept the Feast of Unleavened Bread in Jerusalem. In 2 Chronicles 30, 21, we're told, "And the children of Israel that were present at Jerusalem kept the Feast of Unleavened Bread 7 days with great gladness. And the Levites and the priests praised the Lord day by day, singing with loud instruments unto the Lord." That concludes our second class.